What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, 131 Issues, Female Athletic Trainers Face. This week, we have a couple of different guests. We have Sonia Gisland from the Pittsburgh Steelers. She's assistant athletic trainer with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We have Dawn Stuckey, one of the associate athletic trainers at Rice University. And we have Christina Cope. She is an associate athletic trainer at Klein High School. And this was actually her idea after we talked to Robbie McFarland. This is one of her ideas, so I invited her to be one of the guests. We also have Dr. Josh Yellen from U of H. He's got lots of information about issues females face. And then we have Nicole Kasha, one of the Masters of Athletic Training students at U of H. I am your host, Jeremy Jackson, sitting right beside me.
Shakira.
Jose.
Gabby.
Matthew.
All right, so we're a little bit out of order, but that's all right. So you can join our conversation on the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Using hashtag DSMB. Bob's supposed to be on Twitter. He's not here right now, so hopefully Jose can do that too. We have quite a few people listening live. Can you read those names, Jose?
Jackie
Gonzalez. All right, Jackie.
Rob.
Mitch.
David
Young.
Brown.
Mickey Brown.
I don't know, Michelle.
All right.
Jones.
Nick Jones.
Doc.
Doc Hill. And then it's me, so we can see it there. All right, so thanks for listening live. Thanks for tuning in there. Just want to give those people a quick shout out. So, Matthew, you're going to start us off with the questions.
Can you please tell us about yourself briefly and share your personal journey to get where you are now as an athletic trainer? And first, can we start with you, Sonia?
Sure. Jeremy already mentioned, I'm with the Steelers. I've been with the Steelers for the past 4 years, serving as an assistant athletic trainer. There's three full-time athletic trainers with the Steelers. So there's my boss, the head athletic trainer, and then we have two assistants. And I came by way of, I can start with my school background. I went to Wisconsin for undergrad. I went through their athletic training education program. Followed that up with getting my master's in athletic training at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And while I was there, I was assigned to work with football and men's and women's tennis. So I was starting to kind of experience, when I was at Wisconsin, I also had two semesters of working with football there as well. So when I was at UNC, I had the opportunity to do a summer internship with the Steelers during their preseason training camp. So I was able to kind of get a feel for what the NFL environment was like. So that was in between my 2 years of grad school. Following grad school, I did an internship at Ohio State. I was helping out with a bunch of different teams, but my primary sport was men's gymnastics. And then following that year, I got my first full-time job working with Duke football as an assistant athletic trainer. And then after that is when the Steelers had a opening. So I was called to interview. So that's kind of how I ended up here.
Hey, Sonia, this is Josh Yellen. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a question for you. Sure. What years were you at Chapel Hill?
07 to 09.
Okay. Does Quentin Sawyer ring a bell?
Yeah, yep.
What about Tony Trombetta?
I don't know Tony.
Yeah, but you know Q.
Yes.
Okay. Q and I worked together at Southeastern Louisiana University.
Oh, nice.
And Tony came out apprentices program before Q.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Just want to start making some connections here.
Yep.
Thanks.
All right, Don, same question.
Hi there. Like Jeremy and them said, I'm at Rice University right now, and I've been there for 10 years. So I love Rice and the atmosphere that it brings. Before that, I was at, I played basketball in college, so I kind of took a different route. I started at a junior college in Kansas and played basketball and did some undergrad and associate's degree there. And then I went to Newman University in Wichita, Kansas, and played basketball and did athletic training at the same time and got my bachelor's degree in athletic training and biology. I double majored. And then I went to UT Tyler for my graduate degree. And while I was doing that, I was working at Tyler Junior College as a graduate assistant athletic trainer. And then I stayed on there a year later as a full-time assistant. And then I moved on to Rice University. And that's where I've been ever since. So,
all right. And Christina.
Like you said, I'm at Klein High School now. My journey actually kind of started in high school when I was in high school. I played sports starting at a very young age, and then at a very young age, I was also very interested in medicine. And due to some injuries when I was young in high school, I couldn't do the sports that I wanted to do anymore. Kind of had a wrist surgery that took me out of everything. And the trainer at the Woodlands High School was amazingly helpful in my rehab. And I talked to her. She's still there now, Charlotte Laverne. I talked to her about letting me into the program, and she did. And I fell in love with it. And from there, I found different college programs and kind of toyed between like Tech and Baylor. And I got into the program at Baylor. And I went to Baylor and was in their sports medicine program and was an athletic trainer for, or student athletic trainer for them for the football team and the girls' soccer team. And then mostly more the football team, because by that point, all the people I came in with were all older than me. So they graduated, so I was kind of the oldest one there with the most experience. And then I thought about graduate and, you know, being like a grad assistant and all, and then I looked at my student loans and I was like, eh. So after graduation, I just subbed for a year until I got a job at Klein High School, which happened to kind of fall into my lap a little bit by way of Charlotte Laverne helping me hear about it. And now this is my 10th year there, and I've been going strong ever since. I just kind of figured out really young what I wanted to do and went straight for it.
What year did you come out of Baylor?
2004.
Lori Greenwood was the director.
She was just coming in. They were just switching from the internship to the academic. So I was on the bubble.
Got it.
All right. So for the most part, we're going to try and respond in the same fashion where Sonia and then Dawn and then Chrissy, just that way there's not everybody trying to talk over each other, but it'll happen in a conversation. And like I was telling, I've heard it, I can't remember the exact numbers, but guys will say, you know, somewhere like 1,000 to 5,000 words a day, and girls will say like 25,000 words a day. So I'm expecting some overlap here in the conversation, but you know, all right, so let's get right to one of the comments from Kate, who runs the AT, female AT problems, is that girls just really aren't as good as guys at this job, right? So that's kind of one of the first things. What she actually said was chauvinist, thinking I can't do my job as well as a male, but I just, you know. So Sonia, what are your thoughts? What are your responses to you're not as qualified, or you're not as good as a male?
I think that I'd be lying if I said that never occurred. You never ran across a male who may have had those viewpoints, but then again, we're kind of reading between the lines here, because do they actually come out and say that to your face? I mean, we rarely hear that, but there are undertones where, you know, I may have gotten that feeling working in such a male-dominated sport in the past, where you run across certain individuals that you get that vibe from. And is really what I have to say to that is a lot of times they have that viewpoint because they've never seen a female be successful in a position around where they were. So for example, in the football environment, there's not a ton of females in the higher levels in athletic training. When you go to the D1 college football level or higher than that, you just don't see it as often. So that's where you may find those people more often. But once you're put in a position, you can show that you can do the job, I think a lot of those people's opinions can change. When I worked at Duke football, I was the first female that ever worked on their football staff. And I think I did kind of get that feeling from a few people I may have encountered early on. But once I just kind of focused on doing my job and doing it to the best of my ability, I think those viewpoints kind of changed. And then they saw that, oh, actually, they do a really good job. Or, so really, it just... I think you can just show by example that you can do it. I don't think it really has been an issue for me because I've just gone about my job and, you know, making sure that I'm helping people and giving them the best care possible. And in the end, that's what I'm there to do. And coming to the Steelers, there really wasn't any sort of issue with regard to this topic at all, just because I was coming into a situation where they're already used to having a female on staff. Ariko Iso had been the first female athletic trainer in the NFL with the Steelers for 9 years prior to when I came. So it was a seamless transition, and I really didn't face that at all.
Can I ask you a question, Sonia? Was there anybody that you had in place that was able to mentor you through that process? Or is this a road that you had to travel on your own and come up with some of your own answers?
No, the answer to your question is no, I didn't really have a mentor. I found that when I had my first exposure to working in the football environment as an undergrad student, there were a lot of other female students with me. So we were all kind of in it together. But I just found personally that I love the environment. I've never been much of a girly girl. Like, I like being around the action, and there's always so much going on. There's so many injuries. So I felt a sense of purpose, like being with football more than any other sport, because there was always something for me to do and to help out with. So because I found myself so comfortable in that environment, I just kind of gravitated towards more of those experiences. And because I enjoyed it so much, I think I felt comfortable in the environment. And that just kind of, it was like just a reciprocal relationship with like everybody is around. Because I was comfortable in the environment, they were comfortable with me in the environment. So then with that experience under my belt, I think working with football in grad school just kind of built off of my experiences in undergrad, like, and I continued to feel even more comfortable in that environment. So just from my kind of repetitive experiences in this environment, I think that allowed me to be even more successful, just because I had continued to get so much experience in the environment. So it wasn't like there was a person that kind of held my hand along the way. It was just like, I'm in it, and I felt comfortable doing everything. And I don't know, does that kind of answer your question?
I don't think there was any right or wrong, answer to that. I just, you know, as a, from a program director's perspective, we have a number of females in our program. And if you look at professional schools, whether that's AT school, PT school, OT school, medical school, law school, whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know, there are a number of, the percentage of females to males is changing as compared to what it was 20 or 30 years ago, where you have a lot more females in these professional programs than you do males. And so from a perspective from where I sit, you know, I want to know, what can I do to help facilitate people being successful in a field like athletic training? For me, it was a real, I had a real privilege in that when I first got into it, the first head athletic trainer I worked for, her name is Susan Houlihan, female. And then when I got into my AT program at Cal State Northridge, the head athletic trainer was Rhonda, and she was the first female head athletic trainer at Division I school in the state of California, and our program director was a female. And so along the way, I've been mentored by females, and I've seen this discrepancy, but like you said before, it's not anything that has really kind of come out overtly. I've heard it that, you know, a female is not as qualified as a male, and I totally disagree with that. I don't think there's any merit to a conversation like that. A clinician is a clinician. Your knowledge is your knowledge, and your skills and your abilities are exactly that. Mm-hmm. Are there certain areas where I think that a female would relate better to a female athlete? Sure. You know, as a male clinician, you know, I've been in situations where I've treated female patients, and there are just certain things that a female patient is going to present to me that I just don't understand. You know, I just don't. But my answer to that, without, you know, getting into too much detail, was the first time I came across, well, you know, a female is just not going to be as good as a male in this profession. Well, my answer to that was, they're a male gynecologist, aren't there? And, you know, that pretty much ended the conversation. And so I think, you know, from my perspective, I want to sit and listen, and I want to, you know, learn from everybody in the room. How do we gain some more equality? How do we end some more, you know, how do we end the discrepancy? How do we end the thought process? So I'm just listening, and I'll talk every once in a while.
I think that everyone that knows me would consider me a direct, strong female. And I think that a lot of female athletic trainers in this profession are, just because they kind of have to be. But I think the most important thing that has gotten me to where I am today is my hard work and my work ethic. And I do everything the guys do. You know, I'll carry coolers, I'll tape, I'll load the truck, I'll do whatever I need to do. And if we want to be considered equal, I don't think that we need to shy away from kind of stuff like that. Now, it's not a fun thing to do, but I think that if you work hard and you show up early and you show up on time and you're there longer than everybody else or whatever, it's your work ethic that's going to get you further than if you're female or male. And I think overall that's going to show up in the end and throughout your career. So that's one thing that I've really instilled in all of my coworkers, my students that I've had over the years, is that's something that I pride myself on, is just working harder than anyone else I can, and or just as hard. And that's gotten me, I think that's gotten me a long way.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a male or female issue. I think that's a character issue.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. And I think regardless of whatever setting you're in, I think that a lot of young professionals need to understand now, yeah, you got this opportunity and you got the door open for you, right? And let's take Sonia or you or anybody as an example. What's going to keep you all in that door? It's the fact that you're just going to outwork the other person. I'm just going to outwork you. I'm smarter than you. I'm going to work harder than you. I'm going to do everything I can to show that I belong here. And I think that's a work ethic that needs to be instilled, you know, across the board, male or female.
Definitely. For me, when I was a student trainer in high school, Charlotte was always a really good role model for me. And when I went to Baylor, there was no really treatment differently for, you know, you're not going to be as good because you're a female or any of those kind of things. So I had a little bit of confidence. Well, I had confidence when I came out. When I started at Klein, I don't know if I necessarily got it because I was female, them thinking I wasn't as good, or the fact that I was 23 years old working at a high school. And, you know, there was a little bit of both, but I could have either let those negatives, you know, feelings that I got from people affect me and bring me down, or I decided to use it as like a little bit of fire under my butt. And, you know, but it's like Don says, you do feel a sense that you have to work harder than everybody else to prove yourself. It's like you have to fight harder to prove yourself. You have to work harder to prove yourself. And so that's what I did. And I worked my butt off to get respect from everybody, no matter what I did. And I tried to make sure that all of my students, because we have 45 student trainers in our program and only two are male. So wow. I tried to make sure that all the young girls in my program know that you're going to work just as hard, that you're going to, you know, put forth as much effort as everybody else. You're not going to pull this whole, oh, I can't do it, I'm a girl, you know, this kind of thing. Like if you do that, you're going to take us backwards. So don't do that.
Yeah, I remember Rhonda, who is, and I don't know if she's listening, she's still in California, but Rhonda was maybe 5 feet tall, soaking wet with rocks in her pants, 110 pounds at best. And, you know, she had a really high voice, and she really set the tone for what our clinical experience was going to be. You were going to act a certain way. You were going to dress a certain way. For men, she would do something called the credit card test. If she took a credit card out and ran it up your face and hurt any stubble, you were shaving. For women, there were a certain way that you were going to act and dress. And the reason why was something that you just brought up, right? She was the first female head athletic trainer in that position. And she had worked really hard to get to that point. And she wasn't going to let anybody else, you know, get in her way. And she wanted to set an example for everybody, but especially the females. So the question I have for, I think, the three of you is, all of you just brought up a common theme, right? And the common theme was I was determined to work harder than everybody else because I felt like I had something to prove. So what is it that you felt like you had to prove? That's my question, right? So Sonia and Dawn, right? You both have addressed it from, you know, a college and a professional level. You've addressed it from a high school level, but you've all brought up the same kind of theme. I was determined to work harder than everybody else. Can you describe what that was that you're trying to prove?
I would say for me, I'm a very competitive person. So it doesn't matter who is next to me or who's against, you know, starting from being a student in athletic training classes to the clinical experiences. Like I just always had a drive to be the best. Like it's gonna, I don't know if that's gonna come across sounding, I don't know, the wrong way, but it's not meant to. It's just my competitive drive always instilled me to work my butt off and, you know, do the best that I could do. But in the end, it's because you're trying to be the best. And whether you're the best female or the best man, I think it's gender neutral. We were talking about work ethic. If you want to be the best, you have to work harder than everybody, not just work harder than the males or work harder than, you know. So I think it's competitive drive. Like I was always just trying to do the best I could. And when we're talking about work ethic, not only is it work ethic that really helps kind of separate yourself, but the other big thing is knowledge. And you already addressed that. Knowledge is power. Like you really prove yourself when you're knowledgeable about our profession and you know how to treat injuries effectively and properly. And but yeah, I agree with what she was saying about work ethic, but I also think knowledge is just right up there along with it.
And Sonia, let me ask you a question. So when you first started in the athletic training profession, you went to Wisconsin-Madison, yeah?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So when you first started, did you know that you wanted to stay in football, or were you open to all these other experiences and gravitated towards football? What was your thought process in the beginning?
I was definitely open to working in kind of any athletic training environment as a student. And I did find that the football rotation was my favorite out of all of them. But it's
why? Why?
I kind of already addressed this, but because of the large number, volume of injuries, and there's always something going on, there's something doing, and I enjoy the sport of football. It's just right. A game I enjoy. So you put in tons and tons of hours, but if you're enjoying the environment you're in, it's not a big deal. So I loved working hard. Doing practice setup. Like, you shouldn't really enjoy doing that, but I really enjoyed like going out and getting my hands dirty and just doing that sort of stuff. So, but I found that after I continued to get more football experiences, like, I didn't choose my rotation at UNC. That's just what I was given. And so I found that gaining the football experience kind of convinced me that I'm like, well, maybe I should work in this environment because I enjoy it so much and I'm doing a good job in it. So that's kind of when it was in grad school that was basically when I had the Steelers internship is when I decided that was my goal to work in the NFL.
Dawn?
I would agree with her and just say that, you know, being a former athlete and just my work ethic, I'm competitive. Just I agree with everything she said. It's just more of a personal thing that I want to be the best I can at all times. And I've never really dealt with anyone that's personally said you're not good enough because you're a female or anything. I think that, like I said, it's never been a question because I feel pretty equal to them most of the time because I'm working just as hard or harder than they are competitively. And, you know, just that competitiveness inside. It's more of that thing.
Christina?
Well, for me, it's slightly different because, like I said, I started when I was 23. I probably looked like I was 17. You know, so I always had the problem. And it's around that time, you know, there's a lot of stuff in the news with teachers and students and all that kind of stuff. So I had to work really hard just to prove that I was there to do a job and that I could do my job and be professional and that there was no ulterior motive or, you know, something bad behind it. You know, I worked really hard to show that I could be a cute young female and still be professional.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to prove that to a lot of people, unfortunately, that always had eyes on me, like they were waiting for me to screw up.
You know, and so this is something that when I was getting my master's degree, I wrote my master's thesis on the athletic trainer's ability, their clinical knowledge, and the intervention of disordered eating. And how I got to that point was I was assigned to a female team. And I was the only male that was a part of it was a softball team. And I started to notice some of these sociological discrepancies, right? One, that female athlete was supposed to go on the field and be a competitor and be the, you know, the quote, the beast and crush the ball and all those other things. And when the female athlete came off, they were supposed to magically go in the locker room and they come out and look like a model. Whereas the male athlete, we didn't have those same societal pressures. The male athlete can walk in and look like, you know, a Neanderthal, go play the game and come out and look like a Neanderthal. And nobody said a thing about it. The same thing about, you know, what you just brought up, right? That you were a female athletic trainer at a high school and everybody's got eyes on you. But I guarantee if you were a male going into assembly, nobody would say anything. Right? We see this now as far as, you know, some other societal issues. To have a male coach be the head coach of a female team, nobody blinks an eye at. But to have a female coach be a coach of a male team, whoa, wait a minute. Look what happened in the NFL, right? You have your first female referee. This made the news. I guarantee you, she is just as good or qualified as referee as anybody of her male counterparts. So the question I have for the three of you is, and I, Sonia, you know, you may have already addressed it, but I'm going to ask it again. The question I have for you is, there are some unwritten societal pressures that are on, you know, female clinicians. Tell me some of the strategies that you all use to address some of these societal pressures, because whether they overtly exist or not, they're there. So tell me some of the things that you use that, you know, some of the nuggets that you all can pass along to some of my female students and those that want to get in the profession, things that you've learned along the way. Sonia, I'll start with you.
I think that like a lot of the tools that I kind of use to combat some of these societal misconceptions, I'll call them, It's just really focusing on just really understanding that I can only control what I can control. I can't control what they think of me, so I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just going to put my head down and do my job the way I should do my job. So I think just kind of being good at tuning out some of those, outside distractions is just a helpful tool just to be sure and confident in yourself that you are a good clinician and you are good at what you do. Just having that confidence about you and not worrying what people are thinking or saying or whatever. I think the other big thing that goes a long way is just your overall professionalism, how you dress, how you look. For me, it's more by choice because I don't like to wear a lot of makeup or, I like to wear athletic clothes, so it's not a big deal. But like when you're in a football environment, like you don't want to stick out, because if you stick out, you're going to be a target. That's just, it's simple as that. So I like to blend in, be behind the scenes and just do my job. And then overall just professionalism in terms of not only how you look, but just how you act with people. I don't know how to kind of go into that in as much detail, but there's definitely like people know if you're flirting with them or if you're just talking to them. If conversations go a certain direction, I always steer it the other way and bring it back to the injury. Like, okay, so is this bothering you? Like just being good about kind of handling certain conversations. So those are my big things is professionalism, not really trying to focus on what other people are thinking.
I would agree with that. I think I focus a lot. The age group that I deal with on a daily basis, 18 to 22, you have to be really careful with that age group, but you also want to be their mentor. And that's a really big part of my life is I want to help guide these kids, in the right direction, but that's also being professional at the same time. So a lot of times, you want to be friendly with these athletes, the female, the male, both, and joke around with them. But sometimes it does go to another level where, they start joking around and it gets a little unprofessional, and you have to learn how to take that with a grain of salt real quick and change it and say, hey, I'd appreciate it if you didn't say anything about, that today or, that, and let's go ahead and focus on your injury, just like she was saying, stuff like that. So I think it's the way you handle it. And if you act like you're uncomfortable, then they're going to feed off of that and almost probably do it more towards you. Hey, you want to go to dinner and go to the Red Lobster tonight? I've had that talk a couple of times at football practice,
Jeez,
so it's
big
just
spender.
Like,
big
spender at Red Lobster. So
Red Lobster.
And this is not an advertisement. This is not a, but and you have to just, hey, joke around with them back and say, I'm busy tonight. Maybe, you should pick on somebody your own age or something like that. You just have to spin it where they're not uncomfortable, but they understand that it's not the right area to address you. But I try to become a mentor to them and still want them to be, I still want to be approachable for them. But once it gets unprofessional, you have to reroute it really quick. So
yeah, it's pretty much the same way in high school. Yeah. I think I get it a little bit worse. I've got the 14 to 18 year olds.
Sorry, my son's 14. So I understand.
Which, these kids here know what I'm talking about. It's a different kind of energy and mentality around here. But in my training room, our training room, me and my partner, we have our rules. And our big thing is to not let anybody skimp or get by with not following the rules. And one of the biggest ones is showing respect, whether it's respect to me, whether it's respect to the other student trainers. You're going to show respect. If you're disrespectful, I'm going to call you out on it. Mm-hmm. I do have the boys that, because I do like to look cute. Now, when I'm at work, obviously I'm, dressed professionally, but if it's a banquet or something, I like to put on some nice heels and, a nice dress and whatnot, and everyone would be like, oh my gosh, you look like a girl. Yes, it happens. But I, and they'll say something and I'll take it politely and not, some boys will take it, go to inappropriate places and I'll be like, that's a little inappropriate. And I will call them out.
Yep.
And now my reputation has kind of preceded me. I have siblings of older, that have come through and they know exactly what I'm like. They know exactly what they're going to get from me. If you come in for an injury, we're going to have a talk about that. And that's what the discussion is going to be about. I'm going to be personable, but I'm going to be professional as far as what we're doing. And when I work with my students, you know, I try to bring them in when I'm going over something and going through it and talk to them afterward. This is why we did this. This is why I presented this way. You know, yes, you're working with the kids the same age as you, but you guys are at work. You're not hanging out. So you need to be professional and keep that in mind when you're out there working a game or practice or any of that kind of stuff.
All right. So Sonia, let me ask you before my kids have to leave. Several of my students, mostly female, are interested in working with professional sports. So tell me, what's the reality of that happening? And so what are some of the steps that they need to do so that they can hear that before they have to leave?
Yeah, definitely. So if they're looking, if they have aspirations of someday working in the NFL, the first step is just doing an internship. I would say over 90% of all the athletic trainers currently in the NFL did an internship at one point before they got their full-time position. So that's the first place to start, is applying for internships. Most NFL teams only take students that are at least in an undergrad athletic training program. I could be wrong, but I don't know of any teams that take on high school students. But yeah, so when you're in an undergraduate athletic training program, that's the time to apply for these internships, usually in the fall, because most teams select their interns for the following year after the previous season is done. So it's good to get those applications in, you know, in September, October, November, so they're in by the time the season is over, so they can start selecting applicants. And to apply, you just send a cover letter, your resume, and then a list of references, and you just send them in to the head athletic trainer of the respective team you're applying to. And I will say, for those females that are looking to apply, I know more and more teams are taking on female interns. So the number of female interns in the NFL should be going up each year. I did get a chance to meet with Roger Goodell this past February with some of the other NFL athletic trainers. There were a couple issues on our agenda that we wanted to bring to his attention. This is the first time anybody from the athletic trainers group got to meet with Roger Goodell, the commissioner. We brought to his attention just some issues that we were facing as athletic trainers as a whole. And one of those issues was the underrepresentation of females. So this was an issue that was brought to his attention. I kind of made my case, you know, explained how it definitely works, it can work, and he was definitely supportive. So I think that was, it was definitely very positive. I left that meeting feeling positive about the future of females in the NFL.
All right, so Don, if they want to work in at a D1 school, what is your thoughts there?
Pretty similar. I think that you can do some summer internships as well as a high school student. Like we offer high school kids to come in and work for us during the summer to get some more experience during football conditioning and weight room and stuff like that. Obviously, you have to carry yourself in a very professional manner, not the giggly, giddy stuff that I can't believe I'm in a weight room full of boys kind of stuff like that. But you should be used to that now because you're around them so much anyways. And basically, in a four-year institution, you know, you have to earn the right to be at football. And if you're acting the correct way, professional way, and you're putting in the hard work, then you should get, you know, your time as that semester at football or with men's basketball or whatever. And then it should be pretty easy to continue doing that in the college profession, you know, afterwards. And then pretty much after you go to grad school, or most of the time you have to go to grad school and get a master's degree anymore, they encourage that for college athletics. So you can kind of pick and choose where you want to go and what sport you get to work in your master's degree and your graduate position. And then you just specifically apply for football or basketball or whatever it may be. Go from there.
All right. So it is actually time for them go now. So they're going to take off. So
make sure you all get A's and B's. And if you're interested in applying to the Master of Athletic Training program.
And we had a lot of girls today, Houston. So that's good. A lot of females.
Yeah. All right. So one of the things that Sarah and I always talk about is I have three young boys. You would think, you know, they want to be just like daddy. Well, the oldest one is 4, if he gets hurt, the first thing he does is go to mommy. The other one, I just want mommy. So it's easy for me to perceive, well, a female, that she's just going to coddle the baby. Well, no, it's just that she's their source of comfort. But how have you dealt with that thinking that you are going to be coddling or you're going to be mother-like to those athletes? Sonia?
So this is more, you're saying just like the perception that we coddle, that females coddle athletes, and this is coming from like coworkers, or I guess, where is this coming from?
Well, for me, it would be maybe more, yeah, like coworkers or coaches, kind of all honestly, because the athletes may feel that way too. Oh, I'll go to Christina because she'd be more likely to baby me than Robbie. And so that kind of, do you ever see that, anything like that?
I see. I definitely know what you're getting at. But I think that you can easily kind of dispel that that image by just, you know, working the athlete's butt off in rehab, and you know, they'll never say that again. Or if coaches see that, you know, they'll be like, okay, she's really tough on them. Maybe I was wrong about that image. So I think it's there, but it's easy to just demonstrate that it's not true at all.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't know if there's much else to say. You just can't. You just have to be stern with your actions and show them that you're not going to coddle them, pretty much.
Yeah, Sonny, you pretty much hit it right on the nail. In our training room, my partner is the one that goes out and works with practices, and I stay inside and work with the rehabbers. And I'll have those kids, you know, especially in the high school level, they don't really want to be there. It's kind of maybe daddy wants them to play football. They don't really want to. So they're always, you know, hurt in a way. But I make rehab so difficult and so not fun that they don't want to stay in there. They don't want to come back. Whether it's, okay, maybe they have an injured ankle. Okay, so we're going to do core work until you are, like, falling over or, you know, upper body. Like, just something so that they don't want to come back. And, you know, then like, okay, no. This is not what I thought it was going to be. This is not, you know, I thought you were going to be easy on me. I'm like, nope, it's not easy. But I do think, in a sense, that, you know, that kind of women's sensitivity thing does benefit sometimes as well, because you get the athletes that are truly injured, and maybe they were the star on the team, but now that they're injured and they can't play, they don't have that same role in the team, and they don't have all the coaches coming to them being like, you know, this, yeah, you know, yay, good job, pat on the back and everything, because they're not being able to do anything anymore. So now it's kind of like their loss and their position on the team, and we can help them, you know, just kind of deal with that emotionalness of it, because part of rehab is, you know, keeping their mental state.
I would say 90% of rehab is a solid psychological state.
And so you know, my partner always says, you know, I think more emotionally and he thinks more, you know, just straight arrow type of stuff. And I'm okay with that, because I will relate to a kid if he's hurting or having problems emotionally, mentally, whatever, and I will help him through that as part of the rehab process.
So one of my good friends, her name is Shelly Mullenix, and Shelly's the senior associate athletic trainer at LSU. And so I think she's been there for close to 20 years, highly respected in the field, sought after by many college and professional athletic training rooms, as well as coaches, et cetera. And one of the things that Shelly's taken on is that she's the director of wellness. And I think that she would come out and say, you know, and Jeremy, I'd probably respond to you and say, I'm going to replace the word coddle with, it seems like the female clinician, and you just tapped on this a little bit, Christina, the female clinician is just a better listener. And so now what ends up happening is that you have an athlete that's injured, you have an athlete that's hurt, and is trying to express him or herself psychologically, especially in a very misogynistic gladiator sport like football, where you're not supposed to show any pain, period, end of story. And so now all of a sudden, because this female has this ability to listen, they're able to ask better questions, and they're able to get to the answer faster, and they're able to provide a much better solution. And so I think that perception of, especially in football, you know, where it's like, you know, suck it up and throw some dirt on it, which I never understood how that helped. And I was a football player. I grew up in a football family. My dad was a football coach. I played football for the majority of my life. But there's just certain things that I just don't understand. And so to be able to say, well, you're just going to coddle him. No, I'm going to ask certain questions. And to be honest with you, what I've seen from some females in the sport, and I think it's a real benefit. I think it's a benefit not to have played the sport, because now what ends up happening is that you're not getting caught up in the, oh, I remember when I took a hit like that, or I remember. More than likely, you didn't. And so you're not, you know, as a clinician, you're not clouding your thought process and your objectivity with, oh, I remember going through this, right? So you're able to get to the source of the problem much faster in a much more efficient way. So I think along those lines, that idea of saying, well, you know, you're going to coddle them. No, I'm going to listen to them, and they're going to express their emotions. And the other thing, too, is if you look at the sociological interactions between male and female, right? My wife brings this up all the time. Let's say I'm around a bunch of guys, you know, and you walk in and you're sitting down on the couch and it's like, hey, man, how you doing? Fine. Good. What's new? Nothing. Okay. What'd you guys talk about? Nothing. When as a female, you know, the female interaction, when I see my wife or some of her friends, you know, it's a very in-depth conversation, like hours. They're talking about hours. Whereas the guy, it's like, hey, what's up? Nothing. Hey, you know, did you see John? Yeah, how's he doing? He's doing great. How do you know? Because it's somehow we had that, you know, 2-second interaction and that was it. So I think there's some sociological factors with female versus male. And I think what it does is that it makes you all a better clinician because you're able to get to the source of the problem better. You're able to ask better questions, right? And I think that's just, and I think the, you know, to be honest with you, I think as the, you know, the, besides Jeremy, you know, the male, sole male representation, I think that there are certain things that we need to learn from females being in sports like football. And watch and observe and see how the interaction plays out.
All right, so I got some questions from the chat room. Can you talk about the interview process, Sonia, of going to D1 and then the NFL, and then Don will ask you the same thing about D1? Because it seems, again, I know you said that because I don't remember her name, was at the Steelers first. It was, you said, mm-hmm. It was easy for you, but can you just talk about that process to help somebody that may be in that situation right now?
Sure. So you're asking about what the interview process was that I went through for my college and the Steelers position?
Yeah. And then again, looking at breaking the barriers, females aren't normally here. So what are some of the things that...
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, with the Duke football position, it was a pretty standard, you know, there was a job posting and I applied for it. And then I know I was one of, I think, 3 candidates interviewed for the position. And you go through and you meet with some of the other athletic trainers on staff. You meet with the head football coach. You meet with some of the administrative people. I believe I met with the assistant AD as well as somebody underneath him. So yeah, you just meet a whole variety of people that work within the university athletics, as well as the football program. So it was a day long interview. It was very similar with the Steelers. However, I did not actually send in a formal application, except for sending in my resume, just because my boss he called up 3 of his former interns that he knew had done a good job as in their internship. So that's kind of, that was my internship was basically the interview process. But yeah, and then when I was called up for the actual interview and came up to Pittsburgh, it was very similar to my the college position interview where, you know, I met with the head coach, I met with the team owner, I met with the strength and conditioning staff, as well as the other athletic trainers on staff. But yeah, it was another day-long process. And as in terms of just kind of breaking barriers and stepping into a position where they're not used to having a female on staff before, I mean, I pretty much had to do that when I started at with Duke football because they had never had a female on staff before. And I kind of addressed it already, but really you just have to focus on doing your job well. Because I'm sure there were some coaches that were like, can she really do this job? Does she even know, you know, what the rules are and all this stuff? And really you just kind of really do your job well and explaining injuries to coaches in football terms goes a long way. Like, coach, you know, like this guy has a high ankle sprain. If he was a lineman, you know, he'd have a much better chance of playing this week, but he's a cornerback and he needs to do a lot more than a lineman does in terms of agility and sprinting full out. And so when you kind of break it down in terms of things that they can relate to and show them that you have an understanding of the sport and the demands for different positions and so forth. I mean, that goes a long way, just doing that.
All right, so done.
The process is pretty similar for the Division I interview. Obviously, you know, she didn't touch on this, but when you go, you know, I wore a suit when I went to an interview. It didn't have to be a skirt. I wore a pantsuit, but I felt like I looked really professional and groomed and just looked the part. And I think that's important. You know, you go to the interview with the AD and the coaches and the, even a few players met with me at the Division I level to see how comfortable I was with them. And I think another, you know, thing that really helped me get into the Division I level was that I played basketball and I was actually interviewing for a basketball position. So I could show them the knowledge I had, just like she said about the football position is if you can talk the talk a little bit, even though I never played football, you know, I actually like watching, you know, football on TV and stuff, but I think it's important to know scores and know what's happening and know that somebody just went to prison for life, you know, stuff like that. Like, you need to be able to talk the talk with the coaches at practice in between plays. And I think at football, when I did that at the junior college, and then when I was helping a little bit at Rice, is, you know, they're like, oh, you know, unfortunately, they kind of look at you as one of the guys, but that's kind of the level that you have to get with them. And then they respect you a little bit more and understand, okay, she does know the positions and you're going to have to backpedal a lot, you know, for defensive positions and stuff like that. So with rehab, it's very important that you know how to break down a certain spot in basketball or football or whatever and rehabilitate that compared to a quarterback, compared to a lineman or a basketball player, you know, a guard compared to a post, stuff like that. So I think that's really important to be knowledgeable about all the sports and just have a general overall base of what's going on in the world. But, you know, once again, the hard work always comes back and plays a big, big role. You never know who's watching and who's talking about you. And I've experienced that solely on my own, like a personal experience is my first summer I was with Rice. I did an internship, a full-time internship, unpaid with the Houston Comets. And that was when they had a new owner. So it was kind of a crazy year. And then it was in the same athletic training room as the Houston Rockets. So they were in their off season, but the athletic trainers were there the whole time and they were watching me. There was three athletic trainers with the Comets and I said hi to them a lot and, you know, was friendly with them, but I worked hard. I didn't worry about talking to the Rockets athletic trainers. I did my job. I went on and a few of the other ones were very worried about what the Rockets athletic trainers thought. And they were spending more time with them than they were the athletes. And so I didn't realize it made me shine a lot more when I was doing it. And then the next, after my internship was done, I got invited to come back as a Houston, as an athletic trainer for the Houston Rockets for 2 years. And it was unpaid as well. That's part of folks. That's part of it. You got to do a lot of unpaid internships. But he said, you know, you weren't worried about the hoopla and the hoorah about meeting me and kissing my butt, you know, stuff like that. You just worked and you got down to it and you did it. And I appreciate that. And I got to do an amazing experience for 2 years just from people watching me and seeing my experience. So I don't know how off track I got, but that's something that if I could advise you to do, that's, you never know who's watching and who's talking about you. Mm-hmm. And you always want it to be an amazing thing. So
take every opportunity you have make the absolute best of those opportunities.
And I don't think there's very many females in the NBA either. So it was pretty amazing getting to tape Yao Ming or whatever. It was pretty cool. So
let me ask you guys another question. You know, from a male clinician, and I worked with some female sports, every time I did an evaluation on one of my female athletes, I always asked them, do you want me to bring in a female athletic trainer? Would that make you more comfortable? Especially if, you know, it was a high groin strain or, you know, if we were dealing something with the menstrual cycle or it was something around the breast. Do you all feel like as a female clinician, if you're evaluating a male, and Sonia, you know, your whole population are males, do you feel obligated to bring in a male clinician, or has all that kind of washed away, right? There's no, you don't feel uncomfortable with any lines and they don't feel uncomfortable with any lines being crossed. How do you all handle that?
I guess I can go first. I think kind of like you did, because we have the option, there's two male athletic trainers on staff. You know, it's easy to give the player the option, like, oh, do you want John to check that out? I was like, you know, I'm more than happy to do it. And I have in many cases. It's just, it's because you're professional about it and you're a healthcare professional just doing your job. So it's not really a big deal. Kind of something that falls in line with that is like the locker room. I generally tend to stay out of the locker room if I don't need to go in there. But if there's an emergency, I believe I'm going to run in there and help out and tend to the emergency. So it's just, you just deal with it. But it's just like female doctors and seeing male patients and vice versa. You're just a healthcare professional doing your job.
Yeah, Chrissy and I were talking about that before the program started, that the struggle with there not being a lot of female locker rooms in the football stadium to change clothes, and you have to make sure that everyone's, you know, decent before you go in at halftime, or not really halftime's not that big a deal, but if they're going to the restroom, stuff like that. But I suppose males that work a female sport probably have the same issue with that. So it's kind of a hassle sometimes, but I don't know. What do you think, Chrissy?
Well, touching first on what he was asking about with the you know, having a male clinician come in if you're working with a male, I had a year a while back where I was the only trainer on staff for the entire year. So I did a whole year by myself. And I remember not long after it turned into me being by myself, I had a young man that was brought in to me that the coach was concerned because he was bleeding on the backside of his shorts. Mm. And when I finally asked him what was going on, you know, and the coach stood in there. He was a young man. I think he was a freshman at the time. The coach was standing in there, and I asked him what was going on. It turned out that he thought he had been bit on his butt. And so there was no other way to get around it. It had to be examined to determine what was
shorts.
Going on. Right. But you're doing a job. You are a professional doing your job. If you maintain professionalism throughout the whole thing and don't show any discomfort yourself or show that you're uncomfortable or embarrassed in any way, then the other person who you're examining is not going to become uncomfortable or embarrassed. If you're confident in what you're doing, you're professional in what you're doing, it'll put the other person at ease as well. So I think given the option, you know, you could always do that, but if you're professional in what you're doing, I don't think you have a whole lot to really worry about with that. You know, there are some things where I'm just not going to go. If a male comes into me with a, you know, a genital problem, I'm going to tell him to go see a doctor. Like, I don't need, that's out of my scope. I don't need to deal with that. You know, we'll have a discussion on things you can look for and try to evaluate, but I don't need to evaluate that myself. But other things, high hamstrings, you know, hip flexors, those are those sport injuries that I need to deal with, and I'll do them to the best of my ability. And if it gets to a point where it's too uncomfortable for even with somebody else in there, I'm going to send them off to a doctor to take it further. But what Don was saying about the whole locker room thing, that there are not a lot of female-friendly locker rooms. So it's not even about like going in at halftime because everybody's dressed at the halftime of the football game.
Yeah.
But there are locker rooms that you walk into and the urinals are right there when you walk in. There is no way around it. But I still have a job to do. And in high school, there's only two of us. And he may be taking care of something else and I've got to go in there. And I've got student trainers that got to get water in there. And so we just work to the best of our ability to stay professional. But that is a huge problem as a female, is trying to do your job completely, because you do have barriers that are put up for you that you can't really cross. You can't go into the urinals. You can't, you know, it's one of those really hard issues that you have to figure out solutions for.
All right. Yeah. So Sonia, specifically talking about the locker room, is that an issue for you?
No, like I was saying, our locker room is set up across the hallway from the athletic training room. And actually, there's a back stairwell that you can cut through the locker room to get to go upstairs instead of walking all the way up to the front door and then go up the front stairwell. So a lot of times, like, if there's nothing going on, I will cut through the locker room because I don't. But if there's a bunch of people changing and I know it's like a prime time for people to be changing, I'm going to walk around because it's just, I don't need to do that. But in the event of emergency, somebody's cramping, something happened. I'm going to go in there. Thank you. I was, some stadiums are better than others. You know, some have the athletic training rooms inside the locker rooms located right next to the shower area. So it's not an ideal location. You know, we work around it as well. There are curtains usually that you can slide over. But I think I think the NFL stadiums are probably a little bit farther along than some of the other older college stadiums. But there are still some really old NFL stadiums that are just not as easy to work with in terms of those logistics. I think the biggest problem that I find is just finding a women's restroom that I can use outside the locker room that's not halfway around the stadium. But yeah, you find ways around it to still be able to get your job done.
Yeah, for a lot of times in for the high school, I won't wear what I'm wearing to the game, like when we show up, because obviously I'm going to be setting up stuff and running around, and beginning of football season is pretty hot and sweaty, but there's not always a lot of places for me to change. I do generally have to walk halfway around the stadium to, you know, find a women's restroom, squeeze into a little stall and change in there, or even just to go find the restroom. And that's, at least for you, Sonia, I'm sure most of the NFL stadiums are a little bit farther along than most of the high school stadiums that are currently around here, but they are they're revamping them a little, which is nice, hopefully.
I have a question along the lines of travel arrangements. You know, Sonia, Dawn, Chrissy, you know, you're traveling with teams, you're on the road. You know, when I was traveling with the teams, especially if I was with a female team, I had my own hotel room, right? Do you all get your own hotel rooms? Do you? Yeah, I mean, how does that go? You know, these are all things that I think young clinicians need to know. They need to be prepared for this aspect. Sonia, I'll start with you.
Yes, I do get my own hotel room. I guess that is something that comes up sometimes. Players will need something. So you do have to, like, sometimes go to their room. But most of the time, if I can, I always try to be like, well, let's meet down in the team meal room or in the training room that they provided that the hotel made out of one of the rooms. So usually if I can, you know, we'll meet somewhere. But I mean, that is stuff that comes up. But again, as long as you're professional, there's no issues.
I'm fortunate right now. I work with the women's soccer teams, but I do get my own hotel room still, which is nice because I have treatments in there. But I do know a few of our other athletic trainers that are females. One is the men's tennis athletic trainer, and they have not taken her on several trips this year because they don't want to pay for the extra hotel room in California or wherever. And that's not fair to her. She's losing an experience, and it's not fair to the guys either, the athletes. They're not getting an athletic trainer. Right. And sure, there's only eight of them for the golf team or the tennis team or whatever, but they're not getting the full experience that they should because of that female not having their own room. And it's $300 for 3 days, you know, it's not that much to sacrifice to keep an athletic trainer on the road. So right. I've seen that a lot in Division I athletics, especially the smaller teams, maybe not football or anything, but the smaller teams for sure.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think if you bring it up from a medical liability issue,
that's horrible.
Yeah.
And tennis expects the host athletic trainer to do all the work for you basically is what happens. And that happens a lot.
Chris.
For me, I'm going to be weird and say this is actually one of the perks. Yeah, I do generally get my own room.
Yeah.
And that's one of the perks of being a female for once and, you know, out of the several things that go against us. I have traveled. The way we do it is like we'll have a district trainer go, if it's a regional track or state track or that kind of stuff. Somebody who will cover all the athletes that are within your school district. And I'll get my own room for that. Our baseball team went to state 2 years in a row. And I got my own room for that. But my room was also the training room. So
right.
I would open the door, prop it open. The coaches knew where I was. The athletes knew where I was. And they would come in for treatments. You know, I brought a stim machine and, you know, got extra towels to make our homemade hot packs out of hot water and towels. And, you create it as you go. But I was happy to be a female. And they're like, well, you know, you're a girl and it's all guys bringing you your own room. Okay. I'm okay with that. So,
right, I've got Nicole Cassia sitting next to me. She's finishing up her first year in our Master of Athletic Training program. And so if the three of you were to give some nuggets to Nicole and to say, hey, look, you know, I think, Sonia, how long have you been in the practice now?
As an athletic trainer?
Yeah.
Since 2007. So
you're looking at 8 years. Dawn, how long have you been in?
13.
So that's 21 years combined. Chrissy, how long have you been in?
10.
So that's 31 years, right? So over three decades of experience between the three of you. What are some nuggets that you're going to give to Nicole and say, look, these are some things that I wish I would have learned along the way, or these are some things that are going to help you along the way as a female going into a profession like this? And keep in mind, right, when all of us were coming out, and I think I'm older than all of you, But when all, you know, when all of us were coming out, there weren't as many options that Nicole has now, right? The options that Nicole has are phenomenal, and I'm jealous of how many opportunities she's going to have. But as three females combined with over 30 years of experience, what are some nuggets you can give to her? Sonia?
I would say for any female in this setting, just don't be afraid to be direct. Don't be afraid that you're going to hurt anyone's feelings. But if something's bothering you, if someone's being inappropriate or disrespectful or whatever it may be, whether they're offending you because whether you're offended because it's something about being a female or not, just tell them that they're being disrespectful or talk to someone about it, because you'll more often than not, whoever is being disrespectful will be like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I really didn't mean to. I didn't really know that I was disrespecting you. And, you know, so there are so many things that can be solved by just addressing it immediately. So, yeah, just don't be afraid to be direct.
I think something that's really important is to make sure you're comfortable in your own shoes. Like, don't try too hard to be that over, you know, that that powerful female. You know, you want to be who you are. You don't have to force anything like that. And be comfortable with the program you're in. You're going to know in the future, what program, like the football, if you do want to do football, you're going to know if you fit well with those coaches and his philosophy and their beliefs and things. And it's important to stick with those beliefs that you have and how they do it and how they coach. Coach Bailiff is an amazing coach at Rice, and I would work for him any day of the week if their hours weren't so long, because he instills good things in those men. And I think that that's really, really important to keep with your, stay true to yourself. And if you don't, you know, believe in what they're doing is the right thing, then you need to probably look somewhere else or do that, because it can get miserable really quick.
I think if you go into the high school setting, and whenever you go in for your interview, kind of interview the person back. You'll know right away if they're going to give you the respect that you deserve or not. I'm very fortunate. My head coach at my school is amazing. He absolutely respects me, respects the other trainer. There's no real difference between the two of us as, you know, oh, he's better, he's male. Absolutely not. Like, we're even across the board in his eyes, and he's great for that. And I had an interview with him when he came in, because he came in later. But I knew that we were gonna work well together, because I could just tell. When I did first interview, I've kind of felt like it was going to be a little weird, because I could just tell that first coach kind of looked at me like I was a little young, a little inexperienced. I just used that as a catapult to prove myself. But when you do go in, kind of, you know, ask a few questions back, see how you feel with them. Like Don was saying, you're going to know if you fit into a program and if you belong there. And use that women's intuition.
Yeah. So do you believe that's something the coaches or the aide will ask questions of female, them out, rather than questions they probably wouldn't during the interview?
I don't think it's necessarily about them asking about your ability, per se. I think it's more, you know, some of the older coaches are a little more old school in their mentality. And you can just kind of gauge that right off the bat. And the stuff that they'll ask you, are you comfortable with doing this? How would you handle this? The way that they present it to you, you're going to be able to tell what they're asking of you. And if all they're asking of you is to fill water and not take care of the boys, then that's kind of going to give you an idea of what they're going to expect out of you. So you want to, you know, ask back, well, what would my expectations be, and make sure that they're in line with what you want to be doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And express your goals. If your goal is to be a Division I head athletic trainer and work football, then you need to tell them that. That impresses some people, and that says, okay, you're serious and you want to be with football. And it's not a bad thing to be, you know, the soccer athletic trainer. But I have a different aspiration than some people. But if they're looking for a long-term person that wants to be with football or with soccer or wherever, that's who they're going to focus on. And I think longevity is something that it doesn't happen very often anymore. People jump around job to job, and that's why I think it's so important to be comfortable there. But you also need to show them your goals and say, you know, I want to be an athletic trainer with football and eventually work in the professional setting. And I think that respect, it grows really, really quickly, because they know that you're motivated, you want to be at that level, you're not scared to admit that this is what I want to do, stuff like that. So. It's exciting. All
right, so I got a question about starting a family. Because whenever I started a family, there's no problem. But whenever I started a family, my wife stayed home. So she's no longer an elementary music teacher. She stays at home and what we call a domestic goddess. So
that's perfect.
You know, like, how do you guys deal with that? Well, or, you know, what are your thoughts there? So again, we can start with you, Sonia.
Okay. Yeah, it really hasn't come up as far as the whole family issue. I recently got engaged a couple months ago.
Mazel tov.
So I'm just kind of entering that whole new stage of my life. It's just my wedding is going to be a year from now. So, but that doesn't really change anything as far as...
We all get invitations, right?
Sure.
Great.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, eventually I would like to start a family, have kids. And I'm not really sure, haven't really figured out the details of how that's going to work, but I do know that it's probably going to have to fit in with the regular season, you know, figure out when those 9 months, you know, do some math in my head. But I know it's going to be planned around the football season. But other than that, I don't know. But I know the staff that I work with, the Steelers organization, are great. They're family people. So I know that when the time comes, they'll be more than happy to work with me.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a teeter-totter thing for a lot of women. You know, do I want to stay at home? Do I want to, you know, I've worked really hard to get where I'm at, but I do want a family. So I think timing is everything with your season. But if things happen and you miss a season, you know what? Your life is way more important than a season for any college in America or any high school or whatever. So you have to keep that in the back of your mind. But I think that it always works out. It's always meant to be and works out somehow. I think I'm really blessed to have coaches that have families. And I envision myself bringing my daughter or my son to practice, you know, when they're 2 or 3. I'm hopeful that they can be in the training room and run around, because that's where I was kind of brought up with my other head athletic trainer. He had a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old, and they would play on the TheraBalls all day, you know, and jump on the little mini trampoline and stuff while we were in Saturday and Sunday treatments. And I envision that happening, and I hope that they want to be, you know, comfortable in that setting, because I want them to be athletes too. So I think, you know, if you have a supportive administration and coaches, I would hope that would happen that way.
You want athletes, but not athletes that are in the training room.
Right, exactly. Not hurt athletes.
I kind of always had the same mentality. I mean, that's what I was planning on when I got into working in the high school, was that I would, you know, get married, have kids, and they would run around the training room or run around at practice. And I've got 45 student trainers, so 43 girls that are willing to babysit and would be more than happy to babysit. And, you know, they would come up, and I mean, that was my plan. But like I said, my high school athletic trainer set that good example for me, because she did have her kids up there running around and stuff. And I remember that from when I was in high school, and she kind of instilled in me that I can really do anything I want to do if I work hard and make it happen. I'll do it however I want to do it. If I want to have a family and have a great job, I'm going to do it all.
You know, referencing back to Shelley at LSU, Sonia, Shelley, and I'm happy to make an email connection of the two of you, because she, you know, she's got two daughters, both twins, and, you know, she scheduled, I don't know if you could schedule a pregnancy, but she tried to get pregnant around the season. And my understanding is that, you know, there are pictures of her where, you know, she was like in the middle of the season and she is pregnant with twins. And she was very open about, okay, I need to step away because I need to go pump milk, or I need to go and do these other things. And what makes, you know, what makes the difference now, right? So we have two kids, and one of the things that was really important to me was that I include my kids in what it is that I'm doing, and they're included in what mommy's doing. And so they get to see all these different aspects, and whether they become athletes or not, or whether they go into my field or her field or any field, it doesn't matter. I want them to be well-rounded. And so part of that is being able to expose them to everything. But the other thing about it too is going back to the societal pressure, right? What Jeremy just brought up. Okay, well, the mom wants to stay home. Well, what if the dad wants to stay home? You know, now all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, you know, these kind of roles are reversed. And I think it comes down to, you know, what are you comfortable with?
Sure.
And how are you going to make this work? And, you know, obviously there are some physical limitations when you're 8.5 months pregnant, right? I don't understand that because I'm the male. right? I don't know, understand what it's like to be pregnant. But when you're 8.5 months pregnant, there are just certain things that you're just not going to be able to do,
right?
Right? But that shouldn't interfere with what your knowledge, skills, and abilities are.
To kind of add to that, I kind of say that it could really kind of go both ways. I mean, yeah, there's limitations to what you can do when you're 8.5 months pregnant, but let's say you get injured somehow and you've got a broken foot and you're in a boot. You're going to have limitations there too. It's not any different. It's just it's a medical limitation, literally. There's, you know, you've got to leave to go pump milk. Well, you could have a diabetic coach that's got to leave to go give himself insulin shots. It's just, it's all.
It is what it is.
People need to be
respectful of that.
And if somebody wants to look at it as like, oh, it's all because she's a female and whatever, that's going to be their mentality. But you're going to, I mean, most of us as female trainers will say that, you know, we're not going to be out there pregnant acting like the first woman that's ever been pregnant. Oh my gosh, can't do anything.
Right.
I don't think that's any of our personalities. We'll probably be out there until the doctor puts us down and says, no, you need to stop. And for most of us work till we're sick and somebody actually pulls us off the field. So I think if you go in and you have the kind of legacy behind you of what kind of worker you are, it's not going to really change once you get pregnant and have kids, because you kind of already set up your reputation and people know who you are and the kind of worker you're going to be. But it all starts off, and I'll say this to you, it all starts off with you being comfortable with who you are and actually knowing who you are. Because if you're uncomfortable, you're not sure where your confidence stands, that kind of stuff, it's going to come out eventually that you're not confident. And whether you find a man that's comfortable staying home or not, you know, you need to be 100% comfortable with who you are and what your role is in your life, and then go from there.
All right, with that break, unfortunately, I have to get back to work because I have another meeting that I got to get to. So I'm assuming this conversation can keep going. This is something that I think is really important. Sonia, I have a question for you.
Sure.
If I were to schedule, let's say, like a Skype appointment between you and the rest of my graduate program, would you be willing to talk to them?
Oh, definitely.
That's
be happy
cool.
to do it.
So in private, you know, I'll get your email address from Jeremy. Would that be okay?
Yep, that's fine.
Great. Thank you very much for your time. It's a real pleasure meeting you.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. And if you want to know anything else about the Master of Athletic Training program at the University of Houston, please look up the website at www.hhp.uh.edu/MAT, where you will find Rice University as one of our strategic partners now.
Woohoo. We're excited.
That's it. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Josh, we're going to have to get a banner and put it back there so that it just it's behind you all the time.
Yeah.
Right here?
Yeah, we're just going to get a banner. So go ahead and make up that banner. We'll work on
it. I'll do it. I'll put it right here because Memorial Hermann's one of our partners too.
There you go.
All right. See you guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Sonia.
All right. So I think we covered all the questions that I have written up. One of the questions in the chat room was about doing evaluations, because especially you, Sonia, working in the NFL, you got some really large quads. You're working on a knee. You may have smaller hands. I know Chrissy's pretty small. Her hands are going to be smaller. So what are some of the changes that you've made to make those evaluations?
I'm trying to think. There really isn't a big deal of changes that I've made. Compared to like my male counterparts when they're evaluating somebody. I think I was taught when I was a student in undergrad, you know, when you're doing the Lockmans, you can kind of make it a little bit easier on yourself when you stick your leg under their knee to help support it. Or for the quad stretching, I will admit for like some of the big linemen, if I have to stretch their quad, instead of having them laying prone on the table and then lifting up lifting up their leg the way I do with some of the smaller guys, I will have them lay on their side and do just kind of a modified quad stretch that way. But other than that, those are the only two things that really come to mind as things that I've had to change. But I don't know, I kind of pride myself on being strong and tough for a person my size. So I'd like to think that I can do anything that my male counterparts can do.
You know, when I did my internship with the Texans, Chester Pitts, he was a lineman, and I had to help stretch his hip flexor, and it took two of us anyways. You know, and I'm a 6'1", 200-pound male, and it still took two of us, so.
Yeah. There are obviously, yes, there can be physical limitation when it comes to males as well. So then that's when you really get creative and teach them how to stretch themselves.
Great idea. Don, Chrissy, any other thoughts there?
Really? No, I mean, I'll have some big, you know, football players. We had one kid, he had to have been 6'5", 300 pounds one time. And, you know, instances like that, there's no way I'm going to be able to carry him off the field. You know, if he were shorter, 300 pounds, probably. But my head was at his armpits. So him using me as like a side crutch to he injured his knee was never going to work. But if I couldn't stretch him, I got a student to help me. And it gave me two, you know, it was double edged. I could teach the student while we were working together. And we got the job done on the kid. So, you know, but that's the benefit of being in high school. I have students to work with. Sonia doesn't have, you know, students working with her. But that's what I do as a kind of a modification for me. But I, like her, I try to work out and stay in shape and stay strong so that it's not like a strength thing. It's just, you know, there's sometimes they're just too big to do by yourself.
All right. One other thing, Jackie Gonzalez commented in the chat room here. Mm-hmm. She was just talking about pregnancy. She said she has a 9-month-old right now. During football, it was difficult with games being late, but my coaches understood that I was that after I was done taping and they were all warming up, I would disappear for a few minutes to change and take care of whatever I needed to do. Most of my coaches here all have young babies and see what their wives need to do and made it easier for me. So, like you said, communicating with the coaches, setting the standard beforehand, you know, she mm-hmm. obviously just went through this, and so she understands what it's like to have a big old belly on the football field. So
yeah, nice. Yeah, I was just, I don't know, just kind of trying to envision this whole thing if I was to be pregnant during the football season. I was just like, it's not a really good look for me if I've got a big belly running out on the field during timeout. I don't really want to picture that of myself, but if it happens, it happens. Somebody said that, so I mean, life happens, and so I'm sure whatever happens, we'll make it work.
All right, very cool. Any other final issues? I still have the top 10 list that Kate made, and so I can read through those, and we can go through those and respond, or I can just read through them. Any other thoughts, anything else you want to throw out there about issues you guys face? Because obviously I don't.
I think we covered a lot today.
Yeah, I think we hit on a vast amount of the big stuff.
All right, so I'm going to go through this list. If there's something you want to add in or comment on, feel free. So from, again, Kate from Female AT Probs on Twitter, top 10 reasons it's so tough being a female athletic trainer. Number 10, apparently Spice Girls music is not appropriate pregame music.
Well, I don't know necessarily if it's Spice Girls that we're going at, but, you know, I don't think necessarily as many females are big fans of the hard crunk rap, heavy metal stuff, but it's their game. They're getting ready. I'd prefer some country, but.
All right, so wearing makeup means we're trying to impress someone. And then number 8 is wearing makeup. Not wearing makeup means either we're sick or very tired, even if it's neither.
I've had that happen a lot.
Yes, if I come in without mascara, it's, mm-hmm. are you sick? Are you okay? No, I'm fine. I think sometimes you just want to look good. Like, you know, whatever, if you're the type of person that likes to wear makeup and look good, that's just the kind of person that you are, and that's what makes you feel good. And if you're the kind of person that is not necessarily, you know, big on wearing makeup or everything, then that's still what makes you feel good. So as long as you feel good, then you're going to go into work feeling good, and you're going to have a good day. So I don't think it should really matter either way. It's about making yourself, you know,
comfortable
and feel good and feel happy. You know, I like to wear makeup. It's fun for me, you know, but there are other people that don't like to wear makeup, and that's fun for them, and that's fine too. Either
like,
way.
Like Sonia said, she doesn't really wear makeup a whole lot, so.
Right.
All right. She has number 6. Oh, number 7. Football or wrestling coaches think that we know nothing about football or wrestling. All right. Number 6 reason why it's so hard to be a female athletic trainer is being asked a homecoming, prom, or any other school function is not what we had in mind when we go on date.
Or the Red Lobster.
Well, Red Lobster, that wouldn't be a bad idea. I mean, that's a good date right there.
Yeah, that's pretty decent.
All right. I did take my wife to prom when I was a athletic trainer at the other school. It was a nice little date night. You know, you get dressed up, and I had to go anyway.
Kids.
So
it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
I've never had an adult, like a teacher or a coach, ask me to go as far as a date. I've had students ask me. Guys have asked me to homecoming and prom several times, but I just laugh and say absolutely not.
Not a chance. All right, so pampering of any kind, manicures, pedicures, etc., is impossible because ripping tape chips fingernail polish and our toes live in gym shoes.
That is, I deal with that in high school. I pre-warn the girls. I'm like, I know homecoming's coming up, girls, but I tell you right now, you put those nails on you, and you are going to have a hard time tearing tape. And if you can't tear tape, you can't do your job, and I will ask you to leave. It sounds mean, I know, but students volunteer. They choose to do this, and so that's just one of the things. I'm not telling you can't paint your nails, but they don't need to be 2 inches long.
I like it. I completely agree.
So that's me.
So I also noticed, sorry to pipe in, but I noticed that you skipped one, it's extremely difficult finding khakis, which I completely agree with.
Amen. amen. Can I tell a quick story on that one?
Absolutely.
Okay. When I was at Baylor, this was back, when they used to order all the clothes for everybody all at once. And I'm sure you two are both familiar with this as far as you get the men's polo shirts and you get the men's pleated khaki pants, and just those pants are not female body friendly. And I remember asking the trainer at Baylor if we could go buy women's khakis. And he was very hesitant on it, just being like, I don't want them tight. I don't want them this. I don't want them that. And this was right about the time that boot cut and flare fit were coming out, so the tapered ankle was just not something that you wanted to wear as, a 19-year-old female on maybe, well, at that time Baylor wasn't on TV that much, but, so we had finally convinced him, and we went out and we found some very, still professional looking khaki pants that didn't have any pleats in the front that were, kind of straight leg, flare cut. And from that year on, he changed it to where the girls could go buy their own khakis as long as they passed his approval. And they never had to wear tapered ankles ever again.
That's good.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I was wondering if this could be like a source of information. I didn't know if we could put our heads together. I was curious where you guys got your khakis.
Are you talking pants or shorts?
Both.
Because I will do shorts at games sometimes because it will get so extremely hot down here.
I'm a big believer in the Gap. The Gap has good shorts and pants.
For pants, I've been okay with Kohl's, actually.
Yeah.
Me and Kohl's have gotten to be pretty good friends. But for shorts, I always find if I buy like a size or two bigger with a belt, they go longer and they're looser, but they still fit comfortably. You know what I mean? So. Yeah. That's me, but pleats should just go away.
Yeah.
Agree
in,
with that.
In general, like I'm working the Bayou Bowl this year, and they sent a thing like, we need your sizes for all this stuff. And they said I need your sizes for golf shorts. I said, what are golf shorts? And they're like the pleated khakis. And I was just like, no, you can keep them. I don't want them.
I will say, I found some good, the Nike golf shorts for women. I like those. So. That's usually where I get my khaki shorts.
And Academy. Academy's got some good ones. They're kind of a dry fit material and whatnot. They're a little too long for me, so I have them hemmed up because they feel like past my knees. But I love the way they fit everywhere else. So I just bought those and took them to a tailor and got them hemmed to the length I wanted. But they looked great and they looked professional, but they were this like dry fit material, and it was just, it was like wearing heaven on my... It was beautiful. Just FYI.
As we were going over these yesterday, one of my students, Matthew, the one that was asking questions at the beginning, he's like, it's not hard to find khakis. I was like, yeah, because you're a guy. You're not a girl. That's why this is a female problem.
See, it's really bad for my student trainers because I will talk to them ahead of time. And as being the female, I will let them know. I'm like, look, we have dress code and you're going to follow it. And I will approve your khaki shorts. And if I disapprove of them, you will not wear them. Because high school girls all,
shorts.
They want them tight and short. They want them super tight and super short. And I'll tell them ahead of time, like, I have to approve them. You cannot just show up. And I've had girls that have still shown up, and I've either told them that they have to get something to change into, or I'll put them in something. And I've got old khakis that, I've outgrown or whatnot that are in there. And they're like, well, these are too big. I'm like, well, sorry. You should have bought some that fit that weren't too small. So it is hard for girls to find professional, decent fitting looking khakis that aren't too tight, aren't too short, as far as shorts, or just aren't too, even some of the pants are like completely tight through the knee and then big at the bottom all of a sudden, and it's just like 1970s bell bottoms.
And then you get the other extreme where there's like the grandma looking kind. You don't really feel like looking like a grandma.
The tapered ankle?
Yeah.
Yes, that's... Mm.
All right, so Sonia, real quick before I continue with this list, do y'all have female interns? Are y'all the only professional team that does that?
No, there's more and more teams that are taking female interns. I know the Buffalo Bills do, the Kansas City Chiefs. The Carolina Panthers, pretty sure the Giants. There's a whole number of them that take female interns. We actually have 4 female interns on staff for our training camp this coming summer. So.
Wow, 4 female interns. Is that all? Do y'all have 4 interns, so they're all female this year?
No, we have a total of 10 athletic trainers total. That's including us. So there's 7 interns.
Nice. There was 3 of us and a season-long intern when I was with the Texans. That was in their second year. So, okay. But man, nice.
Yep. That's just our training camp numbers. During the season, we have 1 undergrad student from Pitt and 1 undergrad student from Duquesne. And then we just started having a seasonal intern. So
that's really awesome. That is good. Good to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So number 3 on her list is being hit on by coaches and parents. I've never had that happen.
I have. Have you done?
Yep.
I was going to say, when I read that, I mean, I think it could definitely go both ways. But Jeremy, if you haven't experienced it, maybe I was wrong. I don't know.
You know what I think it is that females are not going to necessarily go up to male as much and hit on them as much as males are going to come up to a female and hit on them. So, you know, you're going to have more dads or male coaches, you know, actually have the guts to say something to you. I don't think females necessarily have the guts to say something to Jeremy.
I've had students say stuff like to other people, or I've overheard, or, you know, say, well, this student thinks you're hot or something like that. That was a long time ago. But but I've never had anybody specifically say, hey, what are you doing this weekend, kind of thing. So, of course, my wife always says I was kind of clueless with girls, and so maybe they haven't.
It was probably happening, and you didn't realize.
Yeah, probably. So, all right, so this is kind of what we just talked about here. Number 2 on her list was cute, functional work clothes do not exist.
They don't.
I work at 5:30 bright and early every morning. We practice at 6 or 7. And so I'm going to tell you right now, at 5:30, I'm not going to wear makeup. I rarely wear khakis. And I'm out on the soccer field, which is quite dewy at that point. So, yeah, sometimes I bring 2 pairs of clothes. Like I wear mesh shorts and a T-shirt and dry fit into work, get through with my practice, and then I change into something else, or I just stay into that or something. So it's hard sometimes to be functional as an athletic trainer and be out on the field and sweat and all that kind of stuff, and then come back in and look professional as well. It's not a fun job sometimes.
Most of my clothes are technically men's shirts, men's athletic pants, men's polos. Most of my clothes that I get that have my school logo are actually men's.
Oh, that they give you.
Yeah. Yes. So, baggy. You know, it's, which I don't mind. I don't really like super tight things, you know, but it is, my work clothes are definitely not cute or attractive, but I'm kind of okay with that in a sense, because I'm not out there necessarily to dress cute or attractive. That's what I do outside of work. At work, I'm there to work. I'm there to be professional. So it's kind of both ways. Like, no, there isn't, but not really what I'm going for either. So I don't know. What do you think, Sonia?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. In a way, it's good that everything is oversized and baggy, but also you don't look like a slob because your shirt is, your sleeves are halfway down your arms. But yeah, that is, I deal with the same thing, because most of the clothing that's issued are men's clothing. So, you know, I wear Nike small through and through.
All right. So then the last thing, I think she tried to put a positive spin, said, as tough as it is to be a female AT, we still get up before the sun and get home after dark because we love what we do.
Mm-hmm. It was the only thing I love about time change is the sun starts to come up when I'm going to work. It's a good thing. But yeah, we do. We work just as harder than most everybody else. We don't see a lot of daylight at home because we work a lot. And I think that says more to character, and it shouldn't be based off of gender. You know, we should be evaluated on our character, not our gender.
All right, Sonia, real quick, you mentioned you met with Roger Goodell about the female inequalities. Has anything come of that yet?
Yeah, actually, they voted I guess it wasn't really a vote. It was just like a mandate that he, I guess I'll backtrack for a second. The NFL Athletic Trainers Group, it's called PFATS, Professional Football Athletic Trainers Society. They had a, I don't know if you want to call it a grant, but like a lump of money given to PFATS from the NFL that is used to give to minority athletic training interns that help out for training camp or are interns throughout the season. So they, for some reason or another, I'm not sure why, but last year that money was taken away. So there was no minority scholarship money to give to our interns. But that after we met with Goodell, we notified him of this. I don't think he was aware at all. He's like, oh, well, as of right now, it's reinstated. And he wanted to give extra money to a lot towards specifically female interns as well. So that was one positive thing that happened right away. So there's scholarship money awarded to females and minority students that are interns. So
very cool. Very mm-hmm. cool. Yeah, as a white male, I don't typically get minority or whatever scholarships or opportunities. But again, I had an internship with the Texans. I can't be complaining much. So
yeah.
All right. Well, if you guys don't have any other issues, then I'll close it out. Any other issues you'd like to throw out there? Closing nope. Things pop to mind?
I nope. I think we hit on most everything.
All right. GHATS is the one that makes the CEU opportunity available. So I definitely want to thank them. So if you're watching live, which I think there's about 9 people watching live, that you can earn the CEU opportunities. Again, that's because of GHATS allows me to do this as part of their organization. Roland Ramirez, one of the athletic trainers for the Houston Texans. He's the one that actually gave me your email address. I think I told you that there. So he's also the creator of the DS2 platform. So I just want to give him a shout out. He was trying to bring me on as a as an assistant during their the OTAs and stuff like that, just to help out, and because I told him I really wanted to learn rehab from him because he is mm-hmm. a rehab guru, but mm-hmm. it just didn't work out. But I really want to thank him for being willing and open to try and involve me in the community and stuff like that. So and then Kate from Female AT Probs on Twitter for pretty much creating the content. So thanks again, Kate, there, because like I've said so many times, I am not a female. I do not know what the female athletic trainer problems are. So she helped out a lot there. Definitely want to thank Sonia for taking some time out of her busy schedule, for Dawn coming over here, for Chrissy coming all the way over from Klein, which is quite a way away. If you want to check out any of our other stuff, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Most every Wednesday we have a show. So for Jeremy, everybody else here, for Sonia, Dawn, Chrissy, that's a wrap.